Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite Lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast universe of lore behind the Mass Effect games. We'll talk about all the details you may have missed, ask the hard questions, and more.
Welcome back to all the Commander Shepherds in the audience. This is the Mass Effect Lorecast, your source for all of the lore behind Mass Effect. I am your host, Tom, or Robots, and I'm here as usual with my wonderful, all knowledgeable, all charismatic, and all handsome co-host, Ed Seven, the legend.
I don't know if my ego can take this.
I'm super complimentary today. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic now that you've said that. I'm riding high and happy to be on my weekend. But, you know, it's been a different few weeks for the show. We had, you know, the half episode, half patron chat, and then we had the patron chat, and then the In 7 Day with Mark Mears interview, which I'm still riding high from as well.
But yeah, that might also have to do with all the marijuana that you're constantly smoking. And currently smoking, I mean, right now. I'm watching you do it.
It's hazy in here. Yeah, it's a constant hot box. In fact, I haven't breathed real oxygen since Obama was president.
I don't even know why we use cameras, because you're just like a bunch of gray smoke, and I'm the only one on camera right now, and our live stream would know this. But if you're listening, this is another reason why you should tune in for our live streams.
And seven in a smoky room.
Smell of doobie doobie doos. Anyway.
You also get to see us sing live if you're here. So thank you all for tuning in live. But yeah, we're back to our regularly scheduled programming, continuing the factions of Mass Effect tonight. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're talking again about what groups influence the galaxy, where deals are made, and where power resides. I'm sorry, I got to address the comment in chat here that says he smells like cheap wine.
Yeah, cheap wine, but only the best doobie-doos. The best of that weed. All right, well, let's leave that conversation behind, because that joke is now thoroughly burned into the ground. Like a doobie dropped on the ground and scrunched into the floor with your sneakers. All right,
that joke is cashed.
That joke is cashed. All right, so what are we talking about today?
So, well, since, you know, we were just talking about the Shadow Broker not too long ago, it seems fitting that we kind of morph this discussion into the Blue Suns, who we're talking about tonight. So the Blue Suns are another group, of course, that influence the galaxy. And although I'm here to tell our listeners that although the Blue Suns may seem like kind of a minor group, they really have had a tangible impact time and time again on the trajectory of the storyline in the trilogy. So starting, of course, with the Blue Suns' involvement with the Shadow Broker's desire to obtain Shepard's body for the Collectors. And we mentioned that before, but before we talk about that, you know, we got to back up a little bit and talk about how this organized crime syndicate began, let alone became important enough to be offered contracts from the Shadow Broker himself.
All right, so let's go back to the beginning. The beginning of the story, the beginning of the Blue Suns. Back at the beginning of the universe, there was the
right
Big
on.
Bang. And then, kinds of Blue Suns.
In the very beginning, in 2160, that's when the Blue Suns were founded. About 23 years before the events of Mass Effect 1, two mercenaries named Zaid Masani and Vito Santiago founded this private security group that they called the Blue Suns as a way to scheme people in the Skellion Verge out of money while offering quote-unquote protection from slavers and pirates. Now, it's my understanding that at first this was genuine protection, but it definitely became a racket after a while. they called themselves a private security outfit, and they were just deep, you know, they're deep in the gun running game, extortions, and as Zaid put it, knocking heads that needed knocking.
And boots so, that needed knocking as well.
Oh, you just know that Zaid knocked more than his fair share of boots across the galaxy.
Yeah, we're going to have to ask our friends over at Two Girls, One Ship about that one.
We demand a Zaid romance, said no one. I don't know. I feel like that would become abusive.
But I don't think it can be called romance at that point.
Right. Well, something with Zaid might take, I don't know, like a 50 Shades of Grey type turn, but he's not rich. So then it would be creepy, right? So,
yeah, for some reason you get away with it when you're rich.
Yeah. Well, a certain famous person said when you're wealthy and powerful, they just let you do it.
Oh, oh no. We ended up back there again.
That
person runs the Orange Suns. That's one of their businesses. Anyway.
yeah. Blue, definitely not their color. Nope. Anyway, Zaid takes care of the operations of the Blue Suns, the grunt work with the mercenaries. And Vito manages the back-end business types of stuff, like accounting and finances, bookkeeping, that kind of thing. But as they grow in sheer numbers and reputation, Zaid and Vito start disagreeing on a lot of issues. And that's often the case in mercenary or pirate bands, right? The final straw, however, is when Vito suggests the Blue Suns get involved in the Batarian slave trade. Zaid unequivocally opposes this, but Vito keeps pressing and citing cheap labor costs as a way to make larger profits. Zaid does not give in here. This is not, you know, something he's willing to compromise for. So like any other, quote, civilized, organized body, Zaid says, Vito pays six of his men to hold him down while Vito shoots him in the face.
It took six guys, huh? Man, that's pretty cold-blooded. So, I mean, this sounds like mafia stuff, right? Like, I get this, like, headcanon here of, like, Vito's like, hey, Zaid, we get some, you know, some cheap labor here going after these. I'm sure my impression is terrible, but, you know, go after the slave trade, you know, get some cheap labor. And then Zaid's like, Vito, listen, I ain't going that far. And then Vito's like, but Zaid, man, we get some cheap labor. You know what I'm talking about, you know, and they just kind of like, yeah. And then eventually one of them's on the ground with a bullet in their head.
Yeah, they're both from Brooklyn. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like more or less how it happens, right? Because they had already been growing apart, as is often the case with these criminal syndicates that are, you know, two-headed. One of the head wants to go one direction, the other head wants to go the other direction. They're both power hungry. They're both mercenary by definition. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a coup. There's a coup, which right. happens, which is exactly what happens with Vito.
Do you think this was like a moral dilemma on the side of Zaid, or was this more of a? So, let me state it this way: sometimes these divisions happen due to moral boundaries. Zaid is going, I'm not getting into the slave trade. That's as far as I'm going to push this. I don't mind taking people's money. I don't mind hard pressing them. I don't mind stealing from people. But slaves, no, that's right out. Sometimes it's all about who gets to call the shots, right? Sometimes it's like, this was Vito's idea. It wasn't my idea. So we're not going there. It doesn't matter if it's a good idea. Vito came up with it. I didn't come up with it. So I'm not going to do it, you know? And it's a power play thing.
I think I've had managers like that before.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a good idea. If I didn't come up with it, we're not doing it.
Right, pretty much. I don't know if that's Zaid's motivation with the whole, you know, nixing unequivocally the Batarian slave trade thing. I think for Zaid, there might be a couple different motivations. One of them being that it's messy. I don't think Zaid wants to get tangled up in law enforcement in any capacity. Mm-hmm. Like, and if they have to, he sure as hell doesn't want to be involved with the slave trade. I think for Zaid, it's not about like right and wrong.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, I can just hear Zaid's old grizzled voice saying like, too fucking messy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like it's just not what he's into. So, for me, I think that Zaid just, maybe inside he feels a moral dilemma about slavery, but on the outside, he's just going to say, you know, no, that's over the line. We are definitely not going to be that kind of group.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he does want to, he wanted the Blue Suns to remain at least a little bit respectable.
Right, right.
Which is funny, no honor among thieves, right? But
sure. Sure.
Yeah, but it becomes a theme time and time again in fiction.
Right.
You know, we've seen other instances of this kind of backstabbing, right? Everywhere from classic anime betrayals to basically every other episode of Game of Thrones.
Right. Or every episode of like Law and Order where they find out like, oh, the bad guy wasn't who we thought it was. It was this other guy that backstabbed this other person. Or like, you know, every movie ever where it's like there's a cross and a double cross and you're like, oh,
right, right. You know, surprised Pikachu face .jpg. Yeah, I don't know why we're surprised anymore, but for Zaid, for Vito, this, you know, divergence was, I think, predestined. Especially with the division of labor that they had, like one side had total control of the mercenaries, of the guys on the boots on the ground, and then one guy had total, you know, management of the finances. Mm. I feel like in almost every scenario, one of those sides is going to try to get leverage over the other.
Well, it's like the corporate dilemma, right? It's the operations manager versus the sales manager. It's just marketing, sales. Yeah, right. It's like that's what it is. Well, all right. Well, well, we kind of have an early mid break here because I think you actually had more on the back end of this episode and the front end of this episode. But we also have a really cool announcement about this month's competition. So, why don't we move into that, and then we're going to talk more about the Blue Suns. So we'll be right back.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this station is mine. I like the sound of that.
Hey, Simone.
Yes, Chad.
What would you say is your favorite bad movie?
Oh, where would I start? But probably at Zombie Strippers.
Oh, yeah, which we've actually done on our podcast, Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast. This is a podcast where we take some of the worst movies ever created, and even some of those movies that you might have thought were brilliant, but still got a bad critic score, and we say nice things about them. Because you know what? Someone put the effort in, so we're gonna be there, fighting in their corner.
Absolutely, Chad. Even if the movie was total garbage, there is some makeup artist that gave it their all, and we're here to recognize that.
Exactly. And with really fun themes every week, such as National Treasure Week, Weddings Week, movies with Jeremy Irons and dragons in them. How could you go wrong by joining us every Tuesday and Thursday for some optimism in your life?
And like we say at the end of every episode, we love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
We love you and there's nothing you can do about it. Goodbye.
This out of the way. Early in the episode today, we're going to thank our patrons. So thank you to all of our patrons and welcome on board to our new patrons, Larry, Michael B. And we've got an upgrade from Genesis. Genesis is back up there with our tier four patrons. So welcome back, Genesis. And I think we probably noted that last time, but it's at the top of my list and it was in my little notification thing. So welcome back, Genesis. And also thank you to all of our patrons, all 42 of you right now. Thank you for supporting the show. You guys are the best, absolutely the best. And all three of our Shepherd tier patrons, Pipe Man, Sovereign, and Stagger and Stumble, thank you for supporting the show. And you know what? We didn't note it this last time, but we do have another competition for a guest appearance on the patron episode at the end of the month, which is coming up in 2 weeks on the 28th. And so you have this week And actually, you know, you got next week too. You got 2 weeks to get this in, as long as it's in roughly before the week of the final episode of the month. Time enough to pick a winner. We'll say by the middle of the week before. So let's say the 25th. We'll just call it now. By Thursday, the 25th, you've got to get your entries in. And what do you need to do in order to get a guest appearance on the Patreon episode this month? Well, shepherds, there's a reason why I called you all shepherds this episode. And here's what you need to do. I want you to record yourself, because last time on the episode, we had Mark Meir saying, "This is Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel," right? That was the quote. And I think I must not have saved the setting right on the thing, because he didn't pop up at the beginning of this episode, did he? Did he? No, he wasn't there. I must not have saved it right. I have to reset it. I'm going to put that in on post-production, so it'll pop back up. But this is what you guys are going to do. You're going to do your best Commander Shepard impression, and you can do your best male Shep or female Shep, and record yourself into your cell phone, into your computer, whatever you can record yourself into. Record yourself into a little MP3 file and drop it right in to the Discord, right into that Mass Effect Lorecast Discord channel. And all you have to say is, "This is Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel," and do your best impression. That's it. And we're going to pick our winner. Male Shep or female Shep, one or the other. Best one you can do. How's that sound? Does that sound good, Sam? And it's just your best.
Sorry,
take.
I was eating taquitos.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Two girls, one Shep. One Shep in chat says, "How many entries can we do? Just give it your best try. You can record as many times as you want, and then just listen to all the recordings and then pick the best one and then put that in there." Well, I don't want like 10 entries and we just have to go through all of them. Pick the best, the very best one that you think is the most similar to the actual voice actor. So go for male Shep or female Shep, whatever one your voice sounds the most like, and then put it in there. And we're going to pick, well, actually our shadow broker will pick the winner. It's not me and Sam. So, And then we'll go. So if you can do a good impersonation of a Commander Shepard, then you might have a chance to win. So that's what we're doing this month. And thank you again to our Shadow Broker, who helps set this up. And also to all of our patrons. You guys are the best. And we'll be back after this quick little sound effect. Here we go.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
We had a few other things on listed here, didn't we?
Just a couple.
I was so excited. I just wanted to hit the button. All right. So update on patrons merch. Where are the stickers and shirts getting sent out? When are they getting sent out? Well, they should be getting sent out soon. I know that, the first set of merch that I had set up were for the Fallout and Elder Scrolls lore casts, and then this show came up after that, and that was a few weeks later. So I should get a notification that stuff should be coming up in the next few weeks, I believe. So you guys, if you are on the Patreon, and you were on the Patreon at the time that we set up the merch, then you will get a notification and an email from Patreon when the stickers and the shirts are sent for printing. So you will get a notification for that. That should be fairly soon. And then you will get a notification for when those get shipped out to you. So it should be very, very soon. I'm hoping in the next few weeks. So make sure, and this is again a reminder, make sure log into Patreon, double check that you have put in your shipping information, because if your shipping information is not in there, then you are not going to get anything shipped to you, because they won't know where to send it. So if you want to make sure that you're getting the thing you're paying for, which is one of the things that you're getting from your support of the show, we made these shirts for you. We want you to have them. So make sure that you have an address associated with your Patreon account. So just go into your Patreon settings and just double check that. Cool. Cool. Also, yeah, you can talk about this one, Sam, if you want.
Yeah, I'm super excited to talk about this. So I mentioned it in the Discord, but for those of us who aren't in the Discord, you know, as a token of our appreciation from last week's episode with Mark Muir being on the show, we also sent him one of the patron shirts of his choosing. So he chose the water blue Paragon shirt, which is, in if I can remember correctly, that's the first one that our patrons tier 4 or higher are going to get.
Yes. The Paragon shirt.
So, So to our patrons, just so you know, the only other people who will have the water blue Paragon shirt are your fellow Lorecast patrons and Commander Shepard.
That's right.
The only other people on planet Earth that are going to have that. So that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
And speaking of shirts, I also want to send out a special thank you to our patron, our tier 5 patron, Shepard level patron, Pipe Man, for the custom N7 Legend shirt that I'm wearing tonight. Here, I'll back up a little bit so that those live can see. So Pipe Man had this shirt designed specifically for me. That was very, very kind of him. And he also sent me this, which is pretty amazing. I don't know if you can see it because of my background through.
It right in front of your face. It might work better. And then like lean toward the camera.
It is a space cow.
Oh, you're
space cow crossing.
It disappears.
Oh well.
Oh, there it goes. Now we can see.
Oh, there
it.
We go.
Yep.
Space cow crossing sign. and I'm fully intending on hanging this up, but I want it visible. So I'm thinking where the best place is going to be. Shifty space cow needs to be seen. So thank you so much to our patron Pipe Man for the wonderful shirt and the space cow sign. I will definitely be sporting that one, at least for my next stream.
Oh, dude, that's awesome. I'm a little jelly, Pipe Man.
We should get a sign for you, maybe, that's like Danny DeVolis.
I would love a Volus t-shirt.
It's like a Volus crossing sign. I don't know.
So just a shirt with a Volus on it. It'd be awesome. Maybe a Volus playing like a saxophone.
Yes. Yes. Sexy Volus saxophone.
Yeah. Sexy Volus saxophone tunes. Yeah. That's what I want. So
yes.
Awesome. Awesome.
That'd
stuff.
Be amazing.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you so much for doing that. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's get back to the lore. We've got a bunch more stuff to get to, and, so why don't we just hit it off? So we got Vito, who betrays Zaid right at the height of the Blue Sun's power and influence, right? They were kind of at the height of their power. But then what happens, right? So, I mean, you kind of called them a band. Does the band break up? No more Warped Tour?
Something like that. You know, they are a mercenary band, and there's my play on words for tonight. But you know, there's probably no more late night post show runs to Waffle House with the boys. That's not where the story ends, though. Now Zaid survives, of course. He survives this whole ordeal, getting shot right in the face. So props to Zaid right there. But after he gets shot in the face, he falls into somewhat of a downward spiral of alcoholism and self-pity. He leaves the entire mercenary game for a while.
Sorry, that was a Nine Inch Nails album. He joins Nine Inch Nails?
Yeah, he goes ahead and forms his own band. He goes and makes his own party with blackjack and hookers.
Okay, all right.
In fact, you know, I think Bender would probably be part of the Blue Suns if Bender were in this universe, but I digress. Meanwhile, Vito thinks that Zaid is dead, because who wouldn't, right? You just shot a guy in the face.
Yeah.
Pretty sure he's dead.
Yeah, that's generally what happens.
Yeah, like, he got shot right in the eye, went out the back of his skull. I don't think this guy's going to make it. You'd think he's dead. But, wait, writing magic. So, he's not dead, but he is blind in one eye, I believe.
At least that
in
part
the meantime,
works still. At least the bullet did something.
Yeah, it did something. Yes, Cloudy Atlas in chat here says rage is a hell of an anesthetic. That's a quote directly from Zaid. It's one of the better ones of the of the entire series, in my opinion. But meanwhile, Vito takes full control of the Blue Suns and hires whatever Batarians he pleases. He goes fully, you know, headfirst into the Batarian slave trade, because why the hell not, right? Vito or Zaid is no longer in the picture, so might as well jump in. Well, soon after, he crowns one Batarian named Solim Dalsara as the new figurehead of the organization so that Vito can run the show from the shadows. Now, this is an effectively empty move because it's only meant to placate their Batarian investors. Mm. And it's also meant to draw fire away from Vito himself and would-be assassins. And my thought is, maybe Vito was afraid of who might come after him on behalf of Zaid. Because clearly Zaid was well-liked, at least he had to be at least well-liked enough among who he was commanding. So there would be some disgruntled people after finding out that their boss just got offed by their other boss. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it works. The move placing Dalsara in charge works because it improves their public relations for the Blue Suns and it ensures Vito's own safety. Mm-hmm. The partnership between Vito and Dalsara continues until, of course, Zaid's loyalty mission is carried out with Shepard. Throughout the next 25 years between then and that time, however, the Blue Suns grow and grow and grow, and they grow into this fearsome combat presence on dozens of planets in Citadel space, the Skellion Verge, and the Terminus systems. Vito recognizes that a good logistical team is key to fielding an army, so he diversifies the Suns. He diversifies its portfolio. He sells arms, starts training recruits, and gathering supplies just as often as Zaid liked knocking heads.
And boots.
According to the Codex, even when the Suns take heavy casualties from one mission, Vito's entrepreneurial expertise ensures that there are new recruits to replace the old.
It's just good
devilish
business
way.
Sense.
Yeah, devilish way to refer to a lot of deaths, but yeah, it's just always just good business.
It's just good business sense, boy.
I'm like thinking of what is his name, Delvin Mallory in Skyrim, part of this Thieves Guild. Anyway, yeah, you know what? There are some similarities between him and Zaid. But again, I digress. According to the Codex, Dalsara, the Batarian front guy, is eventually captured by the Alliance Navy, but he beats like 24 charges leveled against him, and he's ultimately only convicted on one single count of conspiracy. This should really ring true for those of us who like to study crime, for those of us who like to study the mafia, Al Capone, that kind of thing. This story sounds familiar because, you know, imagine that the fake leader / setup fall guy of the organized crime syndicate gets off scot-free relatively because the actions and orders can't really be proven to be his. They can't be traced back to him because he's the fake leader. He's not really the leader.
But he didn't actually do it. So guess what? They can't prove he did it because he didn't do it.
Right. typical tactic. And the Codex tells us that Dalsara, while he was in prison, learned from a brilliant con artist named Bernard Leggett's Ledger. Interestingly enough, there's no page in the Codex. There's no wiki page. There's really hardly any information at all about Bernard Ledger. Interesting they would name him, however. So I think something may be in store regarding him in the future of Mass Effect. That's just an early call from me. You know what I mean? Huh. Like, we can maybe revisit that claim in a few years, but
interesting. Or he was like a quick side reference in like a book or a comic.
Definitely part of one of the comics. However, in my experience with video games and fiction, I feel like writers rarely go to the length to name a character unless they're going to have some extended significance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, while Dal Sarraz in prison, he serves 5 years, and upon his release, he immediately files for the Blue Suns to become a legal security agency. So now they're hiding their crimes in plain sight.
Oi, we're legal now. They can't do anything about it because we're right in front of their faces.
I'd like to see the coppers just come and try.
Well, just yeah. Come right up to the door, knock on the door, let them right in. Just take a look around, copper. Ain't nothing wrong going on here.
The Blue Suns are basically Mass Effect Peaky Blinders. well, maybe that's if Zaid, you know, had his way the whole time, but he didn't, because Vito did. And about Vito diversifying the force, the Blue Suns sport a mix of Batarians, Turians, humans, and Krogans on their payroll. Each deployment of their mercenaries is backed also by a logistics team that sells everything from heavy weapons to shaving cream.
Because everybody needs a smooth chin. That's what I always said.
Can't carry out a mission looking scruffy.
You can't,
yeah, I know.
You can't carry out a mission knocking boots and knocking heads with a scruffy chin. That's what mommy always said. That's what my mom said. She said, Vito, make sure you got a smooth chin, or the ladies aren't going to kiss you.
that's what my mom said. My mom.
What is that? Is that like a Cockney accent?
I don't know where I grew up. I didn't leave the end of my road until I was 19.
Maybe the sewer? I don't know. Vito acts like he grew up in the sewer anyway, but you know, the codex says yeah, two girls, one ship in chat here says, are we sure that it wasn't robots who was smoking earlier? We're not sure. That's unconfirmed. But the codex says that, you know, despite their claims of selling innocuous things like shaving cream, and despite claims that the Blue Suns sells its captives as slaves, no Blue Suns employee has ever been convicted on such charges. Now, I'm going to say, just from a legal point of view, this sounds like a statement that would be put out by a media agency, because if they didn't say this, they would be sued for libel. You know, like, you can't just go around swinging these wild accusations at people, especially if they were not convicted of such things. And yeah, that may be true. They were never convicted of selling captives as slaves. However, the player knows better. And not just the player, but the consumers of the supplemental media, as we'll get to a little bit later. So my overall reaction to that codex entry is, right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't believe it. I don't think anyone else believes it. The whole reason Vito offed Zaid was because of a falling out in regards to the Batarian slave trade. So you're telling me that they brought on Batarian slavers and now they're not selling the slaves? What are they doing? Just amassing a warehouse of slaves? They're like, that's awful.
Employing all the slaves?
They're freeing them. They're putting them back to work. I don't know.
Yeah.
How would they spin that?
They're employing them.
They're employing them in a private security company.
Right. They're freeing them and hiring them and then giving them livelihoods.
Right. And we already know wages. We do all already know that slavery is kind of, it still exists outside of the Batarians in Mass Effect, the Mass Effect universe. Of course, the Batarians are kind of shunned by Citadel space, so the Batarian slave trade is illegal. However, indentured servitude is very much legal among the Asari in Citadel space and in Ilium. Right. They have indentured servitude contracts.
So as long as they pay them a little bit, they're not slaves.
Right.
Right.
Which means
not enough to get their freedom, but just a little bit.
They're commission based.
That's it. They just have to pay them a little bit. You can't leave.
Yeah.
You don't actually get to choose how to do anything, but here's a little bit of money.
Well, they can leave, but leaving would forfeit their employment. And the terms of the contract stipulate that if you forfeit your employment, you get a bullet to the head like Saeed.
Right. There you go. That's it. Yeah.
Right.
So they can't actually leave.
That's their contract.
I mean, they can choose to leave, but if they do, they die. So they can't leave.
Maybe you choose to leave. Maybe we see what happens. I don't know.
We're just going
to
go back and forth between these two accents.
The Brooklyn one and the Cockney one.
They're Cockney until all of a sudden, hey, we got to make a deal. And then all of a sudden they're like Brooklyn Mafia Italian. And then they go, yeah, like, it just depends on the conversation they're having. They just go back and forth.
Hey, Vito.
Yeah.
Hey, I see you turned down a deal and you decided to leave. Looks like we got to make another deal with your brain in this bullet in this gun.
You decide to leave on the day of my daughter's wedding.
Okay, enough accents. Most of the Blue Suns members, regardless of if they're from Brooklyn or from or they're English, they all have the company logo tattooed on them, which to me, by the way, the company logo looks like a fried egg. Because it does. It looks like blue eggs and ham or something. I don't know.
My mom always cooked this for breakfast with fried eggs, so I figured we'd just go with that because you gotta love my mom. She's the best.
Oh, nothing beats some good bangers and mash.
Love to hear Zayed say that. But on the high-risk assignments, they actually take these tattoos off. And it's not like they have, like, you know, portable laser surgery on the go, so it's like, you know, less painful for them. No, instead these mercenaries use a heavy acid wash to get the tattoos off their skin before high risk assignments, so that if they're caught, people don't know who they are. And the tattoo, here's the kicker, the tattoo is promptly reapplied at the end of that mission.
So instead you could just find the guys with the heavy dermal scarring where they normally would have the tattoos from the multiple acid washes that they've been applying.
Right. Hey, Tony over here is like our oldest veteran. How many missions you've been on, Tony?
82.
Show him your arm, Tony. Now he's got two tattoos applied directly to his muscles on his arm. Look at that. He doesn't even have any skin left.
He doesn't have any skin left. They call him No Skin Tony.
No Skin Tony.
Now,
you can look.
Now the only skin left the tattoo is on his lip.
Make your muscles move up. Look at that. You can see his muscle moving right there. Oh, look at that. He stretches the tattoo every time he lifts a box. Look at that, Tony. That's so gross. Tony, you're so gross.
He's lost like all of his toes because they've tried tattooing his toes and then acid washing his toes so many times. They call him No Toe Tony.
No Toe Tony. They just have to keep moving the tattoo to different parts of his body because he keeps on losing skin from all the acid washes. He's just like a muscle skeleton guy running around now.
He's like terrifying. His presence on the battlefield is
zombie
enough
Tony.
To threaten the enemy into submission.
Zombie Tony.
Yeah, I can't believe that they then reapply the tattoos right after the mission. So like on the fresh acid burn that someone has, they're reapplying the tattoo. Like, all right, well, you know, we couldn't wait a week.
No, these people are just so into it. They're like, give me that tattoo back right now. That was awesome. Mission was awesome. Let's celebrate with another tattoo. Bigger this time.
Right. Yeah, I think we're led to believe that, right? Like, they're so gung-ho and psycho that this is what they do. Kind of reminds me of Maelstrom or something from Cyberpunk.
Oh, yeah.
But without the cybernetics, I guess. Mm-hmm. So they're very much, you know, the Blue Suns are very much around and still kicking, even after Zayed is gone. And Vito Santiago is very much still pulling the strings. But as of 2185, only a handful of trusted mercs even really know who Vito is, let alone his old ride or die Zayed. Most people don't even know.
Yeah, that makes sense. He's keeping himself safe. Okay, so we know how the Blue Sun started at this point and what the structure was like and why they're important to the series. So we got all that covered, right? But what about how they rose to prominence?
Yeah. Well, you know, most players may view the Blue Suns as nothing more than a typical gang or group of conveniently organized bad guys who happen to all wear blue. They actually do appear.
Yeah, got it.
Exactly. The fried egg gang. Fried egg Tony. They actually do appear in meaningful ways to the lore time and time again. They're prime time significance, though, in the Mass Effect universe actually goes back all the way to 5 years after their founding. In 2165, they're hired by this flamboyant... Sorry, this next few words don't really even make sense in the Mass Effect universe, but they're canon and it exists.
I like
this.
I like
they're
this
hired
a lot.
By this flamboyant Batarian aristocrat named Idan Hadaa.
This guy needs a voice.
And he became super wealthy by investing in survey teams and archaeologists searching for profitable Prothean technology.
He says so sneaky. I like this.
That's Hadaa's voice.
Mm-hmm. And he says his last name. When he says his name, he says, "I am Idan Hadaa." It's like just coming out of his face. Yes, I like it.
And ta-da. Hadaa orders the Blue Suns to carry out a raid on a Systems Alliance facility at Sidon, which was actually being used to research artificial intelligence from, unbeknownst to them at the time, Reaper technology. All of a sudden, everything becomes like infinitely more complicated. And the Blue Suns function, you know, while they also function as Hadaa's personal bodyguards during some of his more unscrupulous activities, they also take the job for Hadaa. When they do, the Blue Suns are forced to pull out of an arms deal. This is really suspicious behavior to one rogue specter named Saren Arterius.
Hey.
So, yeah, now we're getting some crossroads here, right?
Mm-hmm.
2165, 18 years before the events of Mass Effect 1. And a young David Anderson is tasked from the Alliance and humanity's ambassador to begin an independent investigation into what happened at the research facility at Sidon. And eventually, Anderson fights the Blue Suns face to face because the investigation takes him all across the galaxy, and he eventually saves this researcher who was working with them named Kaylee Sanders because she was kidnapped by the Blue Suns. Now, I don't want to spoil too much about this plotline right here because this is the premise of Mass Effect Revelation, the first of a trilogy of books written by Drew Karpyshyn, who players might remember was one of the lead writers and lore fathers of the Mass Effect universe. Revelation takes place right before Mass Effect 1, and it leads readers right up to the very beginning of the first game. I mean, seriously, like the epilogue, it's like you finish the epilogue and it's boom, the beginning of Mass Effect 1.
Yeah, so they've been like, this is very significant. They've really thoroughly been written into the lore, and even from the very beginning.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I'd say so, especially considering that when accounting for all the supplemental media and the games, Mass Effect Revelation was the first piece to officially release to the public. It released very shortly before the first game. It was meant to be a companion thing, I think. And their impact, the Blue Sun's impact on the greater plot of Mass Effect still continues. Around 2183, Arya catches the Blue Suns selling humans to the collectors on Omega. 2183 is the same year that Mass Effect 1 happened.
Mm-hmm.
So when Arya basically catches them in the act, she ends up having the Blue Suns and the collectors killed. She orders her agents to open fire. And after the battle, Arya is given a data pad with all of the information her agents could, you know, parse. And basically, about the Blue Suns deal with the collectors, what they find is a list of human population totals for Horizon, Omega, Freedom's Progress, the Citadel, Eden Prime, Terra Nova, and Earth. So these are all the locations that the collectors either did hit or were also planning to hit to abduct human colonies in Mass Effect 2. But this happens. This is all unknown to Shepard at the time, because this happens before Mass Effect 2. This isn't unknown to Shepard because they're dead. This is unknown to Shepard because this happens 1 week before the attack on the Normandy. And that's the premise of Mass Effect Incursion, a graphic novel. I highly encourage everyone to go check it out.
Right. And so I think we talked about this during the Cerberus episode, right? The Blue Suns were also intimately involved with picking up Shepard's corpse after the Normandy was destroyed.
Yeah, that's right. So although I don't know if you could call it a corpse after what Shepard went through, I think probably more like pieces.
Well, yeah. corpse pieces.
Corpse remnants.
Yeah. Shrapnel.
Shrapnel.
Flotsam and Jetsam.
Yeah, like we said before, the Shadowbroker hires the Blue Suns to obtain Shepard's remains after he gets spaced and then re-enters Alcara's atmosphere. The Blue Suns, they find Shepard's remains and they put it in a stasis pod for transport back to Omega and then ultimately to the Shadowbroker. And they do succeed in getting Shepard's body back to the Shadowbroker's representative, who, by the way, is, I learned today, was a super huge, beefy Salarian named... Ooh. Tazik.
What's his voice?
In fact, like he is a beefy boy for a Salarian that even Krogan comment on the size of the Salarian. Like he is one absolute unit. But these the Blue Suns are killed ultimately. The Blue Suns involved in that anyway are killed by Liara and Farron in an ambush in an old mining shaft. And as we know, you know, before Liara and Farron succeed in co-opting Shepard's body, getting it out of the clutches of the Shadow Broker. So that means that the Blue Suns do not succeed there. Thank God for Liara, because if Liara and Farron had not killed the Blue Suns and stepped in, then Shepard would probably be, you know, collector meat. And that would be the end of the series. But it's amazing how writing works. And so so funny, here they are.
How that works out.
Here they are, the Blue Suns, you know, popping up again as intermediary bad guys, severely affecting the plot line of the Mass Effect trilogy. And yet they're not done here. They're not done. Of course, they absolutely get dunked on by Garrus while he's parading around Omega as the sniper version of Batman.
With no qualms about killing.
No qualms about killing. In fact, he's not, you know, like he has fewer rules than Batman. He's just like, I'm just going to snipe him.
Man, Batman's job would be way easier if he just took up sniping.
I'm going to make you break your one rule. they don't take too kindly to that.
I'm Sniper Batman now.
I'm Garrus.
I'm Sniper Batman.
Yeah. Yeah. Sniper Batman strikes again. They don't take too kindly to that. But most players, of course, know that this is... And they only know this after having played Mass Effect 2. But what may have slipped through the cracks and really not caught some players' attention is that it's actually because of the Blue Suns that Sidonis betrays Garrus, leading his entire squad to get wiped out and forever change Garrus's psyche. Like, the Blue Suns have a direct hand in this. Mm-hmm. Garrus really, I think, always blames himself for his squad getting wiped out. But the fact of the matter is that the Blue Suns were able to co-opt his squad mate, Sidonis, into betraying the rest of the group. And so here we have another instance of the Blue Suns just kind of meddling in just enough of a way to really affect the trajectory of the Mass Effect plotline. They also run Purgatory, the maximum security prison in the middle of space that Shepard picks up Jack from. You know, and it's also where the Blue Suns try to pull the old switcheroo on Shep. You know, they try to basically say, oh, well, now that we have you here, guess what, buddy? You're fucked. you're in prison now. And unsurprisingly, it doesn't go well for them. Now, when I was researching the Blue Suns and their propensity for slave trades, it all suddenly made sense why they would own and operate a private prison, right?
slaves? They have a prisoners. I don't know. They don't seem too
private
similar.
Security company now heavily involved in the slave trade owns a private prison. And they have a founder with a thick English accent. Boy, I think they might just be the East India Company. They're the Mass Effect East India Company. And weirdly enough, you know, in Mass Effect 3, sequentially, the last appearance of any mention of the Blue Suns, Shepard can gain their allegiance in the fight against the Reapers. Personally, I thought this was pretty weird, right? Considering that the Blue Suns had already worked directly with the Collectors and the Shadow Broker on behalf of the Collectors. So on two separate instances, trying to sell people, one being a group of humans, the other being Shepard's body, to the Collectors. And I also thought that this was weird because at the end of Zaid's loyalty mission, we know that Zaid wants to exact revenge on Vito Santiago for shooting him in the face. Mm-hmm. And you can let him do it. And then Vito's dead. And then that's that. And then, you know, Vito's definitely not in charge of the Blue Suns after that.
Unless he doesn't die from being shot in the face.
Unless he also just becomes blinded in one eye. Right. In which case, we have the manifestation of an eye for an eye playing out.
Uh-huh.
Literally.
And everybody just needs to get better guns at this point.
Right. Yeah, I think that these thermal clips have something to do with it, maybe. I'm not sure. But basically, I find this to be really weird because gaining their allegiance in Mass Effect 3 does not depend on Shepard's actions in Mass Effect 2 in Zaid's loyalty mission. You would think maybe that would be a qualifier, right? Like if you allowed Zaid to follow through with the revenge, then it meant that Vito Santiago was no longer in charge of the Blue Suns. Like, if Vito Santiago did not escape on that mission and you did not lose Zaid's loyalty, then that would mean that the Blue Suns were perhaps more open to coordinating with Shepard, who they knew was kind of on Zaid's side. But that's not the way that it happens. Like, even if you don't do Zaid's loyalty mission, eventually in Mass Effect 3, Darnar Vosk is leading the Blue Suns. And so that's who Shepard goes through to make a deal.
Right. Yeah, I wonder if this is just one of those things that got overlooked with the number of things they were trying to knock out by the time that game got released.
Like, I think it would have to be.
Yeah, like this is another one of those minor points that could have been fleshed out more for people who was keeping track of this stuff. And it would have been interesting to play out and do this stuff, but in the whole scope of the series, this is kind of a sub point that would have been interesting, but was not crucial to getting the game released. And we know there were a lot of things that they definitely wanted to do that they just didn't have time to do. I don't think this was at the top of the list. So
I'm sure there was a lot that, you know, didn't pass the cutting room floor. This was probably one of those things. Who knows? You know, there might have been a whole other side story on how Darnar Vosk, you know, betrayed Vito Santiago.
Yeah.
And maybe that just didn't make the cuts. So who knows? But we didn't see that in the release of Mass Effect 3 or any of the DLC, at least to my knowledge. And it wasn't in any of the supplemental media as well.
Right. Right. So, man, this has been really cool. I also didn't realize how everything was connected until you kind of laid it out here. So that's really neat. So one final question. Where does the name come from?
So there are a few possibilities. One, they might be named after Blue Sun, a corporation in a TV show called Firefly.
Yeah.
That I'm not sure. Have you watched Firefly at all?
Yeah. That's a Joss Whedon. I mean, we know how much of a douchebag Joss Whedon is now, but classic, you know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Angel, and then Firefly was the series that was on Fox and was canned after like 11 episodes. And then he redid it as Serenity, the movie, which basically was the concept of the whole first season kind of summed up in a film. It was good stuff. Awesome characters. Cool story. That makes sense. I can see them paying tribute to that.
So that's one of the possibilities, but the writers could have also drawn inspiration from Black Sun, another criminal organization, but this one in the Star Wars franchise.
Okay.
So I think that one's also a real possibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have any others?
There's one last one.
Okay.
And you're going to love this. So you've noticed that we haven't come up with a band name in a few episodes. Well,
yeah, it's been a while.
Guess what? The universe has done our work for us. When I was researching this, I found out that there's a band. Uh-huh. There's an actual band named the Blue Sunshine Family Band.
Oh, boy.
You know, and it's exactly the kind of music that you'd expect from a Hard Knocks mercenary troupe.
Oh, man.
It looks like they have only released one album, which I've only seen on YouTube, just FYI to everyone. But it's a 100% a rock and roll jam band. Like, definitely something I can see Zaid rocking out to on his way to a mission.
I just look at the image on stream. Also, if you're on the video version, this is what comes up when you choose to play this. I can't play the music for you because I'll get DMCA'd on Twitch. The Blue Sunshine Family Band, new album, 2016.
Yeah, are we allowed to put a link in chat to that?
Yeah, here's a link in chat. You guys can come check this out. I wonder when the band was originally from.
Yeah, I've only noticed the one album from them.
The channel this is on is the Bong Druid of Mammoth Weed Mountain. What? Oh my god.
That's amazing.
Blue Sunshine Family Band Bandcamp. Buy the album here. Oh, there we go. They have a website? Like the Blue Sunshine Family Band. Let's see, how long have they been around? Live, there's only two albums on Bandcamp. Contact the Blue Sunshine Family Band.
Maybe we should reach out to them.
Do you guys happen to be Mass Effect fans?
Hey, do you guys like video games?
Hey, do you guys like video games? We do a podcast. Do you guys
listen to Then, boy, do we have a deal for you.
Do you listen to podcasts? I'm going to have to listen to this. All right. Well, this is amazing. Yeah. We're always uncovering the best things. So...
Oh, there's also an artist on Spotify named The Blue Sun, singular, just one blue sun.
Just one blue sun.
And that music is much more new agey, spacey, kind of like meditation music that I could actually see Samara vibing with. So for anyone that's interested in seeing The Blue Sun, maybe go check that artist out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
but,
cool.
But in terms of what Zaid and Vito would listen to, definitely the Blue Sunshine Family Band.
I don't know, man. If they're doing the Cockney accents, I think they're probably fans of like 80s punk groups. Oi!
Or the Oi. Doors.
Oi! Oi! Yeah.
The Ramones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, like UK bands, like
Who's the band that made West End Girls?
Oh, West End, like that's not a punk band, but The West End Girls. I can't remember the name of the band.
Was it the Clash?
No, the Clash was like Rock the Casbah. Sharif don't like it. Do 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 do. Rock the Casbah. Rock the Casbah. Da 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 da. Boo do boo do. Yeah, like that's the Clash. Yeah, come back for future Tom Sings episodes.
We'll have a karaoke episode.
Karaoke. Well, man, this has been a fun episode. Very cool stuff about the Blue Suns. Where are we going next week? What are we doing?
So, yeah, we're going to charge on forward, you know, with our episodes on the factions, with a show dedicated to the Eclipse.
Cool.
Who also sound like a band.
That also sounds like a band. Yeah, we're going to add them to our band's t-shirt. By the way, there is a t-shirt on the Robots Radio store with some of the band names on it. And it does look like a hodgepodge of all the different logos from bands at a festival. It looks like that on purpose.
There's Darwin's Finches.
Yeah.
There's the Wealthy Pigeons. Mm-hmm. There's the Vorcha and the Yogg.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's bought it yet. Let me go Robots Radio.
I'm going to buy it. I'm going to buy it.
Store. But... yeah, I should go buy it too. It looks cool here. Let me see if I can pull it up.
It's a joke that, like, literally no one in real life, like, when I'm walking around outside, no one's going to get that joke. And if I do, like, run into someone where they understand the joke, they're probably going to be like, oh, my God, it's him.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait a minute. Your voice sounds familiar.
Hey, who are you? And then I'll just don a fake Cockney accent.
Oh, don't mind like, me.
And then be like, oh, it's definitely him.
Is the link not working? Okay, here it goes. Here it goes. Yep. Let me see. I'm going to pull it up. Featured products. Here's the store. Here's the shirts. There it is. Right there.
No, I think if
Milky Way Music Fest 2186. This is the shirt. Right here. There it is. Yep. Milky Way. Oh, it's so low res on this.
Oh, it's okay. So we also got Victor Manswell and the Soul System.
Yeah. So yeah, Darwin's Finches, the Vorcha and the Yogg, Victor Manswell and the Soul System, Mitochondria and Osmosis, and the pigeons.
The wealthy pigeons.
The wealthy pigeons. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it right there. Yep. And I put it down to $19.99. I've got it the low price, and it's like you should price this at like $27, and I'm like no, $19.99. So there you go, friends.
So yeah, Diddle That Bass in chat asks, are you guys going to do a little bit about the Talons? Not sure how much info is actually out there about them. Well, I will definitely look into it. Because we would be remiss if we did not mention the Talons. The Talons, of course, are the mercenary group on Omega, mentioned in the Omega DLC of Mass Effect 3. So, yeah, I will do my research, and we will see if we can include them on their own episode, if there's enough. And if not, then I'll include them on an episode with another one of the groups. So,
there's a die-cut sticker where you can actually see it better. But here's, this is what I would get. If I was a lady, I would get one of these like tank tops that look like the kind of thing you would wear to a festival. That looks awesome.
I'm going to ask my girlfriend if I can pay her to get that.
That would be awesome because it looks like the kind of thing you wear to a festival, you know, where you'd be outside all day in the sun. Yep. A black tank top. Yeah.
Oh, that's black awesome. Tank top screams. Let's slap the bag of Franzia.
All right, dude. Well, you got anything else going on before we head out? This year?
I'm continuing streaming. Speaking of which, I probably got to get some advice from you because Streamlabs came up with this update and it just totally messed up my audio settings.
What?
So I'm going to have to workshop that a little bit. But I am streaming more Mass Effect. I am streaming more other games as well. I've been streaming some Cyberpunk. And I've been streaming, probably stream some Forza Horizon as well.
Yeah.
I think my system's capable of it. So all that stuff and more. If you want to follow me on Twitch, I am found at N7 The Legend. Same on Instagram and Twitter, pretty much everywhere else.
Nice. Awesome. I've also been streaming in the mornings. So Robots Radio's YouTube channel, not here on Twitch. I moved over to YouTube for a number of reasons, and we've been having a lot of fun. Also, if we hit our viewer goals, that terrible looking sexy Santa outfit over there hanging up behind me with the big boobs on it. Yeah, that thing is what my viewers made me buy the other week. Yeah, Santa titties. Yes, two girls, one ship. Santa titties. If we got within three viewers last week of hitting the viewer goal.
Oh man, I should have been there.
Three viewers, and I still don't understand why there hasn't been a concerted effort from the viewers to just like round everybody up and just get in the channel at the same time.
I'll see what I can do.
Three people, and this is what's going to happen: is you get enough people in the channel, and then all of a sudden I have to wear that thing for the rest of the stream. So yeah, playing Skyrim Anniversary Editions out. It's a ton of fun, man. Haven't played Skyrim seriously. Other than just like playing with some mods here or there in like 7 years, but that game still holds up. That game is legit. I'm going to be playing that. We're doing my extreme role play, which has been awesome. And stream gets to help me define the character. So right now, we're a kleptomaniac. We can't fast travel unless we get drunk. We're deathly afraid of chickens. We have to run away from chickens. All sorts of other things. And I've been playing with some mods this weekend. And I think I might even try to design characters in game that look like other famous streamers and then send them pictures Ninja. Of themselves from the stream, or actually just make videos and send them links of the videos, which would be funny. Be like, hey, I designed you. I designed you in my stream. Here you go.
You've been blocked.
Right. Just to see what happens. So anyway, I'll be back tomorrow morning. We stream every morning during the week, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern time. So that's like 6 a.m. Pacific. And we usually go till noonish or a little bit later, depending on what's going on, how much time I have to play games before I have to, you know, go do more responsible things. But come hang out with me. And of course, there's all the other shows on the robotsradio.net website. You can go check all that stuff out or just join us on the Discord. That's probably the easiest way to do it. Jump on the Robots Radio Discord. The Mass Effect Lorecast channel is always super busy with chat about Mass Effect, and there's lots of other channels on there for all the other shows. So if you're interested in getting into any podcasts about lore or anything else, there's lots of different shows on the network. So come hang out with us. We'd love for you to be part of the community. And I think that's about it for this week. We'll be back next week. And remember, do your best Commander Shepard impression. Send us your MP3, put it on the Robots Radio Discord, and you might get a free entry, or you might actually win to join us at the end of the month patron chat episode. So, all right, everybody. I think that's it. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks for being here, everyone. Thanks for being here, chat. Stay safe out there in the universe and don't run into the blue suns. And if you do, just talk to them like this and they might think you're one of them. And then they won't shoot you in the face. But if they do, you might survive anyway. So no big deal. See you guys later. Bye.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Ahoy there, ye landlubbers. Avast, my name is Captain Logan, and I'll be your guide out on the Sea of Thieves. If you love the idea of stealing treasure, cutting down cursed skeletons, fighting off krakens, and raiding forts filled to the brim with shinies, then Sea of Thieves is the game for you. Join me each week as I dive into the news and bring back the nuggets of information that any sailor worth their weight in salt would desire. You don't have to be a pirate legend to gain access to my podcast. Just search for Keelhauled, a Sea of Thieves podcast in your podcast app of choice, or head over to robotsradio.net or captainlogan.podbeam.com and get ready to set sail for adventure. Arr.
My name is Brian Burton. It's been 26 years since the bombs fell. And since I've left the vault, I've been trying to rebuild. But this isn't the Appalachia that I remember. There's so much more to everything going on. And I promise to find the answer. So if you're out there, if you're listening, just hone in on these coordinates. Remember, there's a place for you at the end. Omega.
The Omega Broadcast Fallout Story is available on iTunes, Spotify, and many great podcasting sources.
Hi, welcome to Three Count Thoughts. Let me introduce the crew real quick.
Hi, I'm Maverick Stone.
I'm Romer.
And I'm Jaxus. Join us as we talk all things wrestling. Each week, we'll take a topic from the wrestling world, knock it around a bit, and then go over the week in wrestling from a strictly fan perspective. We can be found on all major podcast catchers. We can also be found at Three Count Thoughts on both YouTube and Twitter. Or you can send us an email using 3countthoughts@gmail.com. Okay, are you ready?
Ring the bell.